That means all the hockey gear needs to be stored in this equipment room. As assistant coach, it's my job to put it all away. Well, do you? She demands when I take longer than 2 seconds to respond. I glance at her over my shoulder. No, I don't. And shouldn't you be doing your homework right now? Not that I mind her company. Dakota is highly entertaining. She hops up onto the closed lid of a large storage container and sits cross-legged. Don't have any homework today. Twirling the end of her blonde ponytail, she chews loudly on her gum, blows a big pink bubble, then says, Why not?
Why not what?
I shove the last helmet on the shelf and turn toward her.
Why don't you have a girlfriend?
Because I don't.
Have you ever had a girlfriend?
Sure, I've had lots.
Well, not since I started college, but I don't tell Dakota that. It probably isn't appropriate to reveal to a 10-year-old girl that I've been single for the last few years because I was busy screwing my way through Briar. Speaking of screwing, if I don't get some action soon, I swear to God my balls will explode. I didn't end up seeing Allie on Sunday, and she wasn't able to meet up yesterday either. She's been busy with rehearsals and mentioned something about needing to make an audition tape. But I'm starting to wonder if she's dodging me. She'd better not be, because I'm not ready for this fling. Sure, fling. I'm not ready for this fling to end.
You know my brother Robbie?
Dakota asks in a hushed voice. I snicker loudly.
No, kid, I don't know Robbie. I just coach his team.
A sheepish flush blooms in her cheeks.
Oops, right, that was a stupid question.
You think?
Giggling, she says,
Anyway, you can't tell anyone, but Robbie has a girlfriend.
I raise my eyebrows.
Yeah? And how do you know that? Are you spying on your big brother?
No, he told me, dum-dum. Robbie tells me everything. Her name is Lacey, and she's in 8th grade.
Dakota shakes her head in amazement.
That's a whole grade higher than him.
I stifle the laughter threatening to spill over.
Landed himself an older woman, huh? Good for Robbie.
Dakota lowers her voice to a whisper and proceeds to tell me every single detail about her brother's 8th grade girlfriend. I listen obligingly, all the while trying to pinpoint exactly when it was that hanging out with middle schoolers became the highlight of my days. Don't get me wrong, the time I've spent at Briar has been awesome. My hockey team won 3 national championships, and academically I've always been at the top of my class. The only course I had trouble with was an incomprehensible politics class in sophomore year, which I finished with a B+. But I don't like to think about that grade because it's tangled up with a lot of other bullshit I'd rather forget. Despite that, I can't deny I've had a successful academic career. I knocked the LSATs out of the park. I got into Harvard Law on my own merit instead of relying on my family name. But I don't remember ever being excited about my courses. I didn't jump for joy when my LSAT scores came back, and I'm certainly not doing cartwheels at the thought of going to Harvard. It was always assumed that I'd go the law school route. It's not something my folks pushed me into, but I can't pretend it's something I'm passionate about. Not like my brother, who lives and breathes the law. He loves his job at the firm, says that every time he steps into a courtroom he feels alive. It's the same way Garrett and Logan feel about playing hockey. Me? I've never had that feeling before. Loving something so hard that it buzzes through my blood and makes my entire body come to life. Or at least I hadn't felt that way before Friday night, when I witnessed the Hurricanes utterly dominate the division leader. And then again today, when I set up a passing horseshoe drill and watched every boy on the ice absolutely kill it.
Dean, you're not listening.
Dakota's aggravated voice jerks me from my thoughts.
Sorry, kid, I spaced out. What were you saying?
Nothing,
she mutters. She's obviously upset about being ignored, which tells me she must have said something important. I drag a metal chair toward her, twist it around, and straddle it, resting my forearms on the backrest.
Talk to me.
Her bottom lip sticks out in a pout.
I was asking you a question.
Okay, then ask it again. I promise to listen this time.
Will you?
The rest flies out in a hurried rush.
Teach me how to skate?
Can you slow that down? I ask with a smile.
Teach me how to skate,
she repeats.
I furrow my brow. You don't know how to skate?
Dakota slowly shakes her head.
Why the heck not?
I'm aghast.
Who lives in New England and doesn't know how to skate? That's just blasphemy.
My mom only had enough money to send one of us to skating lessons, and Robbie's older, so he got to go. And he's going to be a famous hockey player one day, so he needs to know how to skate.
Although Dakota's tone is defensive, I don't miss the note of hurt beneath the surface. My heart does a painful little somersault. My siblings and I never had these kinds of problems growing up. Our family had plenty of money, which means we didn't have to make any sacrifices. Summer got her ballet lessons and swimming certificates. Nick and I got our skating lessons and hockey camps and all the equipment we ever needed. I hadn't lied to Allie the other week. The life of Dean is pretty fucking sweet. I've always gotten whatever I wanted. Now, seeing Dakota's upset face, I feel like a spoiled, ungrateful brat.
I guess that means you don't own skates, I say slowly. She gives another shake of the head.
What size are your feet?
I don't know. Small?
I chuckle. Let me see one of your shoes. She quickly pulls off a neon pink sneaker and holds it out for me. After I check the size tag, I hand the shoe back and wander over to the large metal cabinet that holds the boy's skates. Most of them are far too big for her, but after some rifling and digging around, I find a pair of Bowers on the bottom shelf that might fit her.
I hold up the scuffed black skates.
Try these on?
Horror fills her big blue eyes.
But those are boy skates. I want girl skates.
Another laugh tickles my throat. When her expression collapses, I sigh instead.
Okay, don't worry, kid. I'll see what I can do, okay?
I tuck the evil boy Bowers back in the cabinet and firmly shut the door before she bursts into tears. Coach Ellis chooses that moment to poke his head in the room.
Your mother's here, he tells Dakota.
I'm afraid he'll notice her stricken face and have me arrested for upsetting a minor or something, but when I glance back at Dakota, she's all smiles.
Bye, Dean.
She hops off the crate and darts out the door. Ellis grins at me.
Sweet kid, huh?
I follow him out of the equipment room and we spend a couple minutes discussing what we want the boys to work on next practice. Once we wrap up, I leave the arena and check my phone on the way to my car. There's a text from Garrett saying he's crashing at Bristol House with Hannah tonight, but that he left his Jeep at home, so he'll need a ride back from practice tomorrow. When I stride into our kitchen 10 minutes later, I find a note from Tucker on the fridge informing us he's spending the night at a friend's. His mysterious non-girlfriend, I suppose. And then, the trifecta, Logan wanders in to grab a bottle of water and says he won't be home till late.
Where are you going?
I ask as I rummage around in the fridge.
Boston. Grace's dad got us tickets for this orchestra thing. Neither of us really want to go, but she says he'll be hurt if we don't.
I grin over my shoulder.
So you're spending your evening listening to classical music?
Yep, he says glumly. But there's an intermission, so Grace promised we could fool around in the coat closet during it.
Sounds like a good trade-off.
I know, right?
Logan leaves a couple minutes later, and my in dire need of sex libido springs to life at the thought of having the house to myself tonight. I don't waste any time contacting Allie, who must be as horny as I am because she answers right away. Her.
Yes,
3 days of stress equals coming over right after my workout. Give me a couple hours, though. Me. Favor to ask. Her. ? Me. Bring Winston. The request earns me a laughing emoticon and a winky face, which could either mean, that's hilarious but no, or that's hilarious and yes I will. I hope for the latter. I flip through a Sports Illustrated at the kitchen counter while I scarf down my dinner, which consists of leftover chicken and broccoli. The team nutritionist emails us a weekly list of suggested meal plans, but Tucker, our resident chef, seems to think the word suggested means mandatory because he refuses to keep any junk food in the house. Since he's the only one who remembers to go grocery shopping and the only one who actually enjoys cooking, this is the healthiest house on the fucking planet. After dinner, I shower, shave, and do a little bit of manscaping because I'm nice like that. Then I settle at my desk to start my international relations paper, which I'm still working on when Allie rings the doorbell. I save the file, close the laptop, and go downstairs to let her in. She's on the phone when I swing open the door. She mouths, "Sorry," and holds up one finger to indicate she'll be a minute. Want dinner? I murmur as she enters the front hall. We've got leftovers. Allie covers the mouthpiece for a second.
Thanks, I already ate.
She lifts her hand.
No, I'm still here, Ira. And yes, I sent you the tape. I don't get why you needed it this fast if they're not making any casting decisions until February.
We head upstairs and I let her walk ahead of me so I can admire her ass. When we reach the second floor landing, I can't help but ease in behind her, rubbing my aching groin against her bottom as I bend my head to kiss her neck. She shivers and swats me away.
I don't know, she says into the phone. I'm still on the fence about this role, she pauses. Yes, I read what they asked me to read. My friend Megan read Zoe's part off camera.
I notice that she keeps rubbing her lower back. Every time her palm touches a certain spot, her expression grows pained. Or maybe she's just annoyed with whatever this Ira dude is saying to her.
I overnighted it to you at the campus shipping center, so you should get it tomorrow afternoon.
She presses her hand to her tailbone, massaging absently.
If you think I need to redo it, I will, but I did the best I could with what they gave me. Yes. Yes, Ira. We'll talk tomorrow.
She hangs up and turns toward me.
My agent is driving me nuts, she announces.
I hadn't even known she had an agent, so I'm notably impressed. How come?
He wants me to audition for this Fox pilot, but I'm not able to fly to LA for the casting session, so I had to send an audition tape instead. Now he's all worried that my natural charm won't show through on camera, which is freaking stupid because that's what television acting is, conveying emotion on camera.
I frown when I notice she's still clutching her back. What's wrong?
I don't know, she moans. I think I pulled something at the gym. I've been super stressed about this play I'm doing and I worked myself too hard tonight. My back is killing me.
Want me to rub it for you?
God, yes, please.
I'm about to instruct her to lie on the bed, but then I have a better idea. Get naked, I order. I'll be right back. After years of playing sports, I'm no stranger to aches and pains. Tight muscles, sore ribs, busted knees, I've had it all. And I discovered a long time ago that nothing loosens me up more than a good soak. Since a visit to the team's facilities whirlpool or steam room isn't an option, I do the next best thing by running a scalding hot bath. As the water level rises, I rummage in the cabinet under the sink to see if there are any bath salts or oils I can dump in there. I find a bottle of bubble bath, which I assume belongs to Grace because Hannah has the luxury of using Garrett's private bathroom. G, that greedy bastard, pulled rank on us and used the team captain card to claim the master bedroom when we moved into this house. Logan, Tuck, and I are forced to share the one in the hall, and it shows. The shelves are overflowing with dude products. The towels are forever on the floor, and the wastebasket contains an alarming amount of condom wrappers. Sighing, I start collecting the discarded towels. Logan left a pair of khakis on the rack, but I just drape the damp towels over the pants, then grab two clean ones from the linen closet and set them on the closed toilet lid. I return to the bedroom to find a very naked Allie sitting at the edge of the bed. My body responds, hardening to the sight of all that smooth, bare skin. Her nipples are pointed in salute. Fuck, I want to suck on them. A grin breaks out when I notice what she's holding. You actually brought him?
You texted when I was still at the dorm, so I decided to grant you your favor.
She menacingly waves the dildo at me.
But if you want me to shove Winston up your butt, it's not happening.
I choke out a laugh. Don't worry, I'd prefer if my butt stayed Winston-free.
Good.
She lovingly strokes the pink phallus.
Don't get me wrong, I'll totally shove whatever you want up there. Just not Winston. He's special to me.
Wait, what? Hold up, that's your issue? You're willing to peg me if I ask you to, but only as long as we don't use your precious Winston?
Of course I'd peg you if you asked me to.
She says this as if it's the most normal thing on the planet.
Why would I ever deny you all that prostate pleasure? It's like telling a woman you won't touch her clit.
As a man who has never experimented with his prostate, I can't comment on the strength of that comparison. Her jaw drops.
Never? Really? Okay, we're definitely going to have to change that.
Pass. I tug her to her feet, enjoying the sight of her bare tits swaying. Come on, I've got something that will make your sore back feel better. I lead her to the bathroom and her face lights up when she sees the bubble bath I've prepared.
Oh my gosh, this is awesome.
Taking the vibrator out of her hand, I nudge her toward the tub. Get in, but make sure to leave some room for me.
Oh, we're bathing together? Kinky.
She delicately dips one foot in the water, then moans loud enough to wake up my dick. Not that he was asleep. He's always on high alert when this girl is around.
Nice and hot, she purrs.
I second that. I set Winston on the edge of the tub, then strip out of my t-shirt and sweats. The water sloshes as Allie slides forward so I can get in behind her. The steam rising around us smells like the strawberry flavor of the bubble bath. I make a contented noise, drawing her slippery, naked body against my chest. My legs are too long for this damn tub, so I have to prop my knees up. But I don't care, because Allie's round ass is pressed up against my cock, and I'm perfectly willing to deal with some leg cramps if it means keeping her in this position.
Okay, back to our butt talk. Are you really not the least bit curious to know what it feels like?
I glide my hands down her tailbone and start kneading her smooth, wet flesh. Not in the slightest.
Oh, that feels great. Keep doing that.
She moans again as she sags into my touch.
What about a finger? Let me stick one finger up there and see what happens.
I snort. I appreciate the offer, but no.
Would you feel better if a guy did it to you? Because, sweetie, I have a few gay friends who would kill to get their hands on your ass.
This time, I give her a hell no.
I never took you for a homophobe, she taunts.
I'm not.
Liar.
I'm not, seriously. I don't care if you're gay or straight or bi or whatever other category you fall under. I'm just not interested in bottoming for some dude. Dicks don't do it for me.
How do you know? She challenges. What if you hook up with a guy and end up loving it?
Trust me, I won't.
How can you be sure unless you try it?
I shrug, which summons a squeal from her.
Oh my God, you have tried it.
Water splashes over the edge of the tub as she twists around so we're face to face.
Who was he? What did he look like? What did you guys do? Tell me everything.
There's nothing to tell.
Bullshit.
She runs one hand over the tiny white bubbles clinging to my pecs.
I'll make you a deal. If you tell me about your gay experience,
she pauses enticingly.
I'll tell you about my lesbian one.
Just like that, I'm harder than steel. Deal, I say instantly. Her laughter bounces off the shower tiles.
Men, you're so easy to manipulate.
Of course we are. It's our fatal flaw. We're ruled by our cocks. I skim my hands up her soapy stomach to cup her tits. I keep catching tantalizing glimpses of her nipples peeking through the white suds, and I can't help but seek them out with my fingers. When I pinch the rigid peaks, Allie makes a throaty sound and closes her eyes. Nuh-uh, I chide, dropping my hands. You can't dangle a lesbian encounter in front of me and then not follow through.
Oh, right, I forgot.
She shrugs dismissively, which causes droplets to fly off the edges of her hair.
I made out with a girlfriend of mine in junior year of high school. We got drunk at a party and decided to try it.
Another shrug.
It was all right.
Just kissing?
Yep.
And it was only all right? I grumble. Well, damn, that's disappointing.
Gee, I'm so sorry my experience doesn't live up to your pervy standards, but that's what happened. Okay, your turn. When did you go gay?
Also happened in high school, I confess. A buddy and I were on a double date and the girls dared us to kiss. We said we'd do it only if they kissed. Didn't think they'd call our bluff, but nope, they actually started making out like porn stars. So Jason and I couldn't back out.
Did you like it?
It wasn't awful, but it didn't get me hard.
Was there tongue?
Yep.
A lot of tongue?
I don't know, a normal amount. She looks as dissatisfied by my tale as I was with hers.
And it didn't go any further than that? You didn't touch the tips of your dicks and pretend you were sword fighting?
I laugh hard enough to make all the water in the tub eddy like a river rapid. No, but now I kind of wish we did. That sounds like a blast. I choke out between chortles. Dick swords. Allie goes into hysterics too. The way she's shuddering with laughter causes her soapy thighs to slide up and down my crotch, which swiftly transforms my amusement into pure arousal. She's still laughing when I capture her mouth in a hungry kiss, but not for long. Soon she's gasping against my lips, locking her hands at the nape of my neck as her tongue tangles with mine. I clasp her hips and ease her forward until my shaft is lined up with her pussy. She whimpers when I glide my length along her wet flesh, rubbing my cock head over her clit. "Dean." Her breathy whisper barely registers. I'm too distracted by her warm, slippery pussy and the soft tits I'm now squeezing in my palms.
"Dean."
"Hmm?"
"Did you hear that?"
I suddenly notice she's gone stiff, and her head is slanting toward the closed door. I still the slow movement of my hips and listen carefully, but the house is silent. I don't hear any- Oh, shit. Wait. I do hear it. The unmistakable sounds of someone thumping up the stairs. And then,
"Bro, you will never believe what happened."
Before I can blink, Allie is out of the tub, her naked, dripping wet body diving behind the door half a second before Logan throws it open. Chapter 17. Dean. We drove all the goddamn way to goddamn Boston only to realize I left my goddamn wallet at home. So we had to get back in the truck and drive all the way home, and now... Logan skids to a stop, cartoon character style. I'm surprised his head doesn't spin and his eyeballs don't bug out. His gaze bounces around the bathroom like a rubber ball. He looks at the towel rack where his cargo pants are hanging. He looks at the bathtub where I'm lounging like Cleo fucking Patra. He looks at the bubbles surrounding my body like a fluffy white cloud. And then he looks at Winston.
"Dude," I blurt out, "it's not what it looks like."
"Nope, nope, nope, I don't want to know." Logan throws his hands in the air and starts backing toward the door as if he accidentally walked into a lion's den. He halts, snatches his pants off the rack, continues backing away. His eyes once again focus on the pink dildo 2 inches from my hand. I try again. "I promise you it's not, I don't want to know." He lunges out the door and slams it shut. I hear his footsteps thump toward the stairs, then they thump back to the bathroom.
"Hey, listen, I'm gonna stay with Gracie tonight. That way you can, finish up whatever it is you're, doing."
Fucking hell. I wait until I hear the front door shut before I address Allie.
"You hid behind the door? Really?"
She steps forward sheepishly.
"I'm sorry."
"You can shove your sorries in a sack, baby doll. You realize what you've done, right?" I glare at her. "You've officially allowed my best friend to believe I love to shove dildos up my ass."
"Oh, that's not true. If anything, Logan is enlightened now. We opened his mind to delightful possibilities of anal play."
"Get in here," I order. Allie quickly lowers herself in the water and kneels in front of me.
"I am sorry, you know. I probably should have told him that I was in here."
She tucks a strand of wet hair behind her ear.
I like the idea of keeping this a secret. You know what will happen if everyone finds out we're screwing around? They'll get all up in our business and turn this fling into something bigger than it is.
She's right. That's the nature of the social beast. And I was trying to avoid the same thing, but... God damn it. Logan is never going to let me live this down. Taking a bubble bath with a pink dildo... Allie has doomed me to a fate as the punchline of a never-ending joke.
"Let me make it up to you,"
she begs.
"I'm sure we can find some way to get Logan off your mind."
Her soapy fingers encircle my cock, which rapidly hardens in her hand.
"See, you're already forgetting."
I groan when she gives me a firm stroke. "Nope, I'm still mad at you."
"What'll it take for you to be unmad at me?"
"Your mouth, for starters." She considers it, her gaze tracking the motion of her own hand beneath the water.
"Normally I'd say yes, but I don't think I can hold my breath for that long, and I'm pretty sure I'll drown if I try to suck you off with my head underwater."
Chuckling, I rise to my feet and brace one palm on the tiled wall. Suds slide down my chest and cling to my wet skin. How about now? This I can work with. She scoots closer so her face is a scant inch from my jutting erection. Then she licks her lips, and it's the hottest thing I've ever seen. No, correction. Watching her wrap those lips around me is the hottest thing I've ever seen. She sucks gently, her tongue circling around my tip as if she's sampling a delicious treat. Her soft moan hums through my body, triggering a jolt of pleasure. I reach down and trace my finger along the perfect O formed by her lips as they stretch tight around me. You have no idea how gorgeous you look right now. Her blue eyes lock with mine. I shudder when her mouth welcomes me in, hot and wet and eager. With each slow suck, she takes me in deeper and deeper until I'm damn near poking the back of her throat. Jesus, I want to pump into her mouth hard, but I know if I increase the tempo, I'll shoot way too fast. You, her breath tickles my engorged tip, are so? She licks the underside and I tremble with need. Suckable. A laugh wheezes out. And what makes me suckable? This? She squeezes my shaft. This gorgeous dick? Big, but not too big? Her fingers wrap around me again. Thick, but not too thick? It's perfect. Is there such a thing as too anything when we're talking dicks? Laughing huskily, she swallows me up again. And I no longer remember what we're talking about. Because Allie Hayes is too damn good at giving head. She cups my sack as she works me with her mouth, licking and swirling and basically driving me out of my goddamn mind. Every square inch of skin starts to buzz. The growing pleasure makes my knees wobble. Keeping one hand on the wall, I thread the other through Allie's damp hair until my palm is cupping her scalp. You gonna let me come in your mouth, baby? She hasn't yet. The last blowjob she gave me ended with her jacking me through the climax, but I've been dying to shoot in her mouth, feel her throat working to swallow every drop. Allie peers up seductively. My balls go tight to my body, heavy with need. When she gives a slight nod, I'm a goner. The release sears into my body and spurts out of my cock. A hoarse groan breaks free as she sucks me dry. It takes almost a full minute to recover. Once my breathing steadies and my vision clears, I drop into the water again, nudging her backward. Allie squeaks when I lift her up on the small porcelain ledge. It's about a foot and a half wide, offering plenty of room for her to sit. My turn, I mutter. Her eyes smolder as I part her legs and stroke her inner thighs. The skin there is baby soft, silky beneath my fingers. I'm about to lower my head and feast when I remember something. With a wicked grin, I slide backward in the tub and reach for Winston. Allie's breath hitches. Let's see if Winston gets you off as good as little Dean, shall we? I drag the tip of the sex toy over her clit, chuckling when she widens her legs even further apart. I love her shamelessness, how she's up for anything and completely unapologetic about it, just like me. I tease her for a while, gliding the toy up and down her slit until she's bumping her hips forward, visibly agitated, aroused. Then I spread her apart with my fingers and ease the head of the pink toy toward her opening. We both watch as I feed it inside her. I was trying to go slow, but she's so wet that the toy's entire length slips in without resistance. I draw it out, leaving only the tip there, then plunge it in again. Allie moans. I do too, because yet again I've been proven wrong. Watching the dildo tunnel in and out of her, that's the hottest thing I've ever seen. How do you feel? I murmur. Full, she murmurs back. With the toy still wedged inside her, I bend down and press my tongue to her clit. I lick it softly and start moving my hand, the lazy drag of my tongue matching the lazy thrust of the toy. Allie clutches my hair and squirms on the ledge. The movement of her legs splashes water in my face. I don't care. I capture her clit between my lips and suckle it, while Winston continues to do his job down south. The noises escaping her throat get breathier, faster. I suck harder and shift the toy so it's hitting her at an angle, and that gets me a delighted, "Oh my God." I smile against her hot flesh as she convulses. I love making this girl come. She always reacts like she's just received an unexpected gift, like she truly didn't expect this big shiny present, but hoo boy, she's more than happy to tear open the wrapping. Her body sags in a blissful cry, and then her eyelids flutter open. "I love Winston." I gently pull out the toy, but I'm not gentle in the way I scowl at her. "You know he's not real, right? Trust me. Let me put him inside you just one time, and I'll bet you'll be singing a different tune." We drip water all over the bath mat and tiles as we get out of the tub. When I bend over to drain it, Allie smacks my butt and says, "Stop tempting Winston." I snicker, then turn around to grab her towel. In my room, Allie sets the toy on my dresser and starts to dry off. "I really am sorry, by the way," she sighs. "Logan is going to torture you about what he saw, huh?" Big time. When guilt floods her expression, I sigh too. "Don't worry, it's fine. I'll tell him someone was hiding behind the door because she was embarrassed." Allie looks alarmed. "I won't say it was you." My reassurance has the opposite effect. Her eyes darken with displeasure. "So you're going to tell him you had a random girl over?" "Would you rather I said it was you?" "No, but..." She bites her lip and says nothing. I've been with a lot of women. I know women. And when they clam up like this, they're not just working one thought over in their brains. No, they're constructing a complicated web of scenarios and what-ifs, each thread layering over another, thickening and twisting until suddenly they're mad about something that never even occurred to you. I stifle another sigh. "Spit it out, Alley Cat. Are you sleeping with anyone else?" That catches me off guard. "No, of course not." Once again, the reassurance falls on deaf ears. She's even warier now. "I'm not," I say firmly. She studies my face as if she's playing Where's Waldo, except she's hunting for a lie instead of a weirdo in a hat. Then she lets out a breath. "We probably should have had this conversation before we had sex again. The whole, are we or aren't we exclusive?" I suppose she's right, though it's not a discussion I have often. Everyone I hook up with already knows it's not exclusive. On both sides, because it's not like they're staying true to me either. I fucked a cute sophomore a few months ago who openly admitted she'd just come from a date with someone else. With Allie, I just assumed it was exclusive. I wouldn't dream of playing games with Wellesley's best friend. "We're exclusive," I tell her. "You seriously haven't been with anyone else?" She doesn't even try to hide her surprise, and I don't know if I should be insulted. "Not since the first time you and I were together." She nods. "And you're cool with that?"
"Are you?"
Another nod. "I want it to be exclusive. I mean, I understand that this is a fling, but I don't feel comfortable with the idea of you sleeping with anyone else. Same goes for me. I won't do it either."
"Okay," I say easily.
Allie remains unconvinced. "You're being too agreeable about this."
"Would you prefer I throw a tantrum and demand to fuck other people?"
"No, but..."
And there she goes, biting her bottom lip again.
"You're saying you're perfectly content to just be with me for as long as this lasts? What if I get busy again like I was these past couple days? You won't go out and jiggle down with someone else?"
I was good with this talk up until this point. Now I'm annoyed. "What? You don't think I can keep my pants zipped for a couple measly days?"
"We didn't see each other for 3 days, Dean, and you wouldn't stop whining about how hard up you've been."
"Just because I like having sex on the reg doesn't mean I'm crawling the bars every second of the day looking to get my nut off."
"Okay, sorry," she says ruefully. "But I had to ask."
She fidgets with the bottom of her towel.
"Look, do me a favor, all right? If someone hits on you when you're out and you're dying to sleep with them, or if you just feel like, taking another lover, will you shoot me a text saying fling over or something?"
"I will, I promise her. But honestly, I don't envision that ever happening. I haven't thought about anyone else since Allie bulldozed her way into my bed that first night, which is disconcerting. I figured that if we hooked up enough times, I'd eventually get her out of my system. But this girl turns me on something fierce.
Even now, in the midst of an awkward conversation about taking other lovers, my body is primed for a second round. I'm starting to wonder if I'll ever get her out of my system.
Allie. I went on my first casting call when I was 12. I was super pumped about it, and although I didn't get the part, I still had a blast reading for the casting director, who was the loveliest woman I'd ever met. She gave me valuable feedback I still remember to this day and advised me to keep at it because she saw something in me. It wasn't too long after that when I realized the audition process isn't always kittens and rainbows. Doesn't matter if you're reading for commercial gigs or day player jobs or juicier roles, you're bound to face this particular hurdle at least once. The difficult acting partner. Yep, there's one of those at every audition. The person who tries to sabotage you even though you're reading for different parts. Or out-act you because they need to look better. Or behave like an unprofessional ass and forget all their lines, making you look bad in the process. Or sometimes they're just jerks, and you'd rather boil every inch of skin off than be in the same room as them, let alone read a scene together. I've encountered all types of scene partners over the years, and the best advice I ever got about how to handle it came from Jack Emery, the acting coach at the drama camp where I volunteered. He told me to use the negative energy. You can't control how the other actor is going to behave. You can't force them to remember their lines, or force yourself to make nice with someone who, frankly, doesn't deserve the energy it takes for you to fake a smile. Jack instructed me to take that negative energy and channel it into my own performance. Sure, the advice doesn't necessarily apply when you're reading for a cereal commercial and you're supposed to be happy-go-lucky, all smiles as you shovel sugar into your mouth. But it absolutely helps if your characters have a combative relationship. In that case, it's easy to use the anger or irritation or just plain hatred and bring it to the performance. Which is what I'm desperately trying to do at Thursday night's rehearsal with the senior who's playing my sister. I've had classes with Mallory Richardson in the past, but this is the first time we've acted together on stage. Last week, we had our scripts on hand because it was the start of rehearsals. This week, our student director wants us to perform Sans script. Not the whole play, but a couple of script-free scenes to jumpstart the memorization process. I'm fine with that because I've memorized half the play already. Mallory, she can hardly string together a full sentence. "Face it, Jeanette, you're weak," Mallory says flatly. "Why do you think Bobby left? Because he couldn't..." She stops. "Line," she calls to the front row, where our director and two student producers are seated. There's no mistaking Stephen's frustration. I don't blame him. This past hour, I've heard Mallory shout line so many times that the word has lost all meaning. "He couldn't stomach your sniveling," Stephen supplies, his baritone voice carrying through the cavernous room. "You're pathetic, you," Mallory interrupts. "Thanks, I know the rest. I tripped up on the sniveling part." Stephen signals for us to start again. "Face it, Jeanette, you're weak. Why do you think Bobby left? Because he couldn't stomach your sniveling. You're pathetic. You fall apart. Line." I resist the urge to lunge across the stage and tackle her to the ground. Maybe scream the words into her ear at top volume so they sink into her lazy brain. Stephen rattles off the next line. We start again. "I'm tired of being the one who has to hold your hand and wipe your tears and..." "Bobby is dead," I roar, staggering toward her. "If I want to cry about it, I'm damn well allowed to. And nobody asked you to hold my hand. I didn't ask you to come here, Caroline." "I'm here because..." I wait for it. "Line." And on and on it goes. Line, line, line. We have the auditorium until 10:30, which leaves us another hour to rehearse. Normally, Stephen makes use of every available second. Tonight, he's clearly had enough. He stands up and announces that rehearsal is over. I'm surprised it took him this long.
We'll regroup tomorrow, he says. We've got the space from noon till 3, so we can cover a lot more ground then. Read over the scenes a few more times, Mal. You really need to nail down your lines.
I'm so sorry, Steve, Mallory moans. At least she has the decency to look embarrassed. I didn't get a chance to study the scene last night. I was preparing a monologue for Nigel's class. She sighs loudly. I'm swamped right now. Welcome to college, I want to say, because come on, does she think she's the only one with a heavy workload? I'm taking a screenwriting course that requires me to write 2 scenes a week. My film theory professor assigns so many readings, my eyes are starting to cross. For my audition workshop, we're expected to prepare monologues every week. The seminar is designed to help student actors get comfortable and build confidence for the audition process. But apparently, it's too easy to let us use existing material to fake audition with. Needless to say, I'm equally swamped. But you don't see me making excuses. Nope, I still find time to memorize a few measly pages of dialogue. I'm happy that rehearsal is over, though. I'm too close to throttling Mallory, who doesn't even say goodbye to me as she leaves the stage. We'll do better tomorrow, I assure Stephen. I feel awful that we let him down today, because I know how serious he is about directing. The first time we met, I teased him that he should be in front of the camera and not behind it. Seriously, the guy is gorgeous. Dark chocolate skin, flawless features, mesmerizing eyes. He reminds me of Idris Elba, minus the sexy British accent. But Stephen isn't interested in being an actor. He once told me that his goal is to win a Best Director Oscar by the time he's 40.
You're not the one who needs to get better, Stephen replies. You're doing a terrific job.
I tuck the compliment in my proverbial back pocket and exit the stage through the wings, digging into my bag as I walk. I find my phone and my heart flips when I see a missed call from Ira. I'd called him last night for an update about the Kavanaugh play that I'm dying to audition for. I'm not certain it's even happening or if it was just a rumor buzzing around Broadway, so I asked Ira to look into it. I check the time. It's 9:30, so that means 6:30 on the West Coast. I know he's still in LA because he texted earlier saying that he was doing lunch with the producer of the Fox pilot. I don't know if I'm happy or disappointed that the producers let me send in a screen test. Luckily, I probably won't hear back from them anytime soon since they aren't officially casting until February. Hey, Ira, I say when he picks up. It's Allie. I wanted to check if you had any news about the Brett Kavanaugh play.
Actually, I do.
Then why didn't you call me?
The production process has definitely started. I know one of the producers, so I reached out to her.
He pauses.
It's not good news.
My heart drops to the pit of my stomach. Oh, what did she say?
It's an all-male cast. Bold move, huh?
Very bold. Not to mention devastating. I suddenly find myself desperately wishing for a penis.
Unfortunately, that means there isn't a role in it for you.
No kidding, I'm penisless.
But I told Nancy you're interested in working with Brett again. She promised to pass that along, so who knows? Maybe he'll give you a ring when he has something else brewing.
That cheers me up, a little. I'm still mega bummed by the news. I send Dean a message on my way out of the building. Me. Such a crappy day. Might vent to you later. How was the game? He doesn't message back. Granted, it's only been 3 seconds, but he's usually pretty quick to reply. 5 minutes into my walk to Bristol House, and there's still no answer. His game would be over by now. Hannah said it started at 6. It's nearly 10. 5 more minutes pass. I'm almost at the dorm. Why isn't he answering? It's been 10 minutes, crazy pants. Relax. Instead of relaxing, I grow even more distressed because something troubling has just dawned on me. I didn't contact Dean because I wanted sex. I wanted to vent about my day. Oh, shit. Hannah is absolutely right. The word casual doesn't exist in my vocabulary. I had a crappy rehearsal, and my first instinct was to reach out to the guy I'm sleeping with and tell him all about it. Have him listen to me and comfort me and tell me it's all going to be okay. Repeat after yourself, Allison Jane. He is not your boyfriend. He is not my boyfriend, I say firmly.
What?
A tall guy in a parka slows his gait and glances over at me. I jerk in surprise. Oh, I wasn't talking to you. His gaze rests on my ear, and I realize he's searching for a Bluetooth. When he doesn't find one, he gives me a strange look and keeps walking. Talking to yourself doesn't make you a crazy person, I call out after him. Well, unless you're the homeless guy I used to see around Brooklyn, who would scream about government conspiracies and how aliens are stealing our brain cells via our phones. Then again, who's to say Lou isn't perfectly sane? Maybe aliens are doing that. I can't prove otherwise. I trudge the rest of the way home and let myself into the darkened suite. Hannah isn't home yet. I know she went to the hockey game tonight, so I give her a call to find out what she's up to now.
Hey!
Wherever she is, it's loud. I hear a cacophony of voices in the background and a pounding bass line that thuds in my ear.
I'm at the bar. You want to join us?
I put on a casual voice. Who's there? Garrett and the guys? And Dean? I stop myself before the question pops out. Damn it, I'm acting like a girlfriend again. An incredibly nauseating girlfriend to boot, the kind who checks up on her man when he isn't with her.
Yup, most of the team is here. We won tonight, so everyone's celebrating.
Another wave of music swells over the line.
Garrett keeps trying to challenge me to a shot contest.
What are the others up to? I ask with feigned nonchalance. Logan, Tuck, Dean. I hate myself right now. I really, really do.
Tuck isn't here. Logan's playing pool. And some girl is trying to eat Dean's face off.
My entire body goes cold. Excuse me?
Anyway, I can barely hear you, Hannah says. Text me if you're coming.
My hand trembles as I put down the phone. Dean is at the bar making out with someone else? 2 days after we talked about being exclusive? Oh, hell no. 18. Allie. My mother was a beautiful woman. I'm not saying this because I'm her daughter and therefore saw her through rose-colored lenses. I'm saying it because it's true. Eva Hayes was a beautiful, stunning, exquisite woman. She modeled when she was in her 20s, and though she wasn't tall enough for runway work, she was a high commodity in the print market. I still have every catalog and magazine spread she ever did in a scrapbook I keep on my bookshelf. I inherited her blonde hair and blue eyes, but my features aren't flawless like hers. Mom had one of those classically beautiful faces that would make men, women, and children stop and stare whenever she walked by. Me, I'm more cute than beautiful. But I've learned that the right makeup and the right clothes can transform any girl from cute to sex bomb. I don't know what my plan is. Dean and I aren't dating, first off. And since I don't want anyone to know we're fooling around, I can't storm into Malone's and dump a pitcher of beer over his head. What I can do is show him exactly what he's giving up. I won't lie. It hurts that he didn't give me advance warning like he'd promised. And it definitely stings that he's with someone else tonight when I would have been happy to keep flinging with him. But I knew, going into this, who I was getting involved with. Dean Hayward De Laurentiis sleeps around. The end. My ego, however, refuses to stand for this, which is why 30 minutes later I find myself sliding out the backseat of a taxi and stepping onto the curb in front of Malone's. My peacoat keeps me toasty as I linger near the door, debating my plan of action. A couple of college guys pop out of the bar, and I'm gratified when both of them stop to check me out. Ha. and their appreciative gazes are based solely on my makeup and fuck-me-silly updo. They'd probably be salivating if they saw what was underneath my coat. I reach for my phone. Here, I tell Hannah. Where are you? Her. Pool table. Taking a breath, I walk inside and make my way through the crowd. The music vibrates in the floor beneath my heels as I pass the booths on the left and head toward the archway where the main room opens onto the game room. There are half a dozen more booths and tall standing tables in this section of the bar. I instantly spot my best friend. She's talking to Logan and Hollis, while Garrett circles one of the green felt tables with a pool cue in his hand. Holding a beer bottle, Fitzy is watching Garrett line up a shot, his own cue resting on the wall beside him. I finally catch a glimpse of Dean. He's almost hidden from view in the corner, talking to a curvy brunette in skinny jeans and a low-cut sweater. Nice sweater, sweetie, but I can beat that. I unbutton my coat, slip it off, and tuck it under my arm. Then I square my shoulders and saunter up to the pool table. A wolf whistle slices through the music, courtesy of Logan. Jesus, he marvels at me. You look bangin'. His blue eyes twinkle. What's the occasion? I smile demurely. Just felt like looking pretty. Hannah snorts. Babe, you look more than pretty. I think every dude in this bar just sprung a boner. I shrug. I only care about one boner in particular. I wonder if little Dean has noticed me yet. So you won the game, huh? I say to Logan. Damn right we did. Nice. You guys are back on track then. I know Big Dean was upset about their three-game losing streak. Yeah, don't get ahead of yourself. We were up against a Division II team, and even then we barely squeaked out the W.
Yo, Logan,
Garrett shouts.
Think I can make this shot?
Excuse me, ladies. My supreme billiard skills and best friend services are required. He wanders off. Hannah leans in closer. So, does this mean you're ready to dip your toe in the dating pool again? Grinning, she gestures to my outfit, which, if I'm being honest, doesn't really say I want to date. It says DTF. My royal blue bandage dress stops at about mid-thigh. I wore a push-up bra, so my cleavage is out to there. My smoky eyeshadow makes my eyes look huge. My 5-inch stilettos make my legs look impossibly long. Sure, they nearly froze off during the walk from the cab to the bar, but the quest for hotness sometimes requires a sacrifice. That's Beauty 101. Nah, I'm just testing the waters. Her smile widens. Well, consider this test aced. I'd do you. I tense abruptly, feeling Dean approach before he even sidles up to me.
Looking good, baby doll,
he says lightly. But I hear the edge in his voice, and his displeasure is unmistakable. Which is preposterous, because what does he have to be peeved about? I'm not the one who was making out with someone else. Thanks. Who's your friend? I ask in the sweetest voice I can muster. His expression goes blank.
Huh?
I nod toward the brunette, who's inspecting us with visible suspicion. I can't believe Dean has the gall to act like he doesn't know her. I just saw them talking.
Oh,
he answers.
Polly? Paula? I didn't catch her name.
Of course he didn't. Penelope, Hannah supplies. I sat next to her during the game. She's a massive Dean fan. Talked my ear off about you the whole time. My best friend smirks. I finally had to interrupt and tell her you don't live up to the hype. I second that.
Bullshit, I'm better than the hype.
Even as he protests, he sounds distracted. I can feel him staring at me. I'm going to get a drink. I push away from the table.
Great idea,
Dean says in an overly cheerful voice.
I could use one too.
I clench my teeth as he follows me. It's damn hard to run in these heels, so I settle for a speed walk and hope I lose him in the crowd. God, it was a stupid idea to come out tonight. I don't know what I was expecting, but it wasn't this. If anything, I'm even tenser and angrier than I was before. A squeak flies out of my mouth when I'm suddenly tugged backward. Dean's lips brush my ear as he growls,
"If you came here to tease me, it's working."
My jaw stiffens. I spin around and level him with a glare. Contrary to what you believe, the world doesn't revolve around you. Except he's right. That is why I came. And now I feel totally and utterly foolish because I'm not the kind of girl who plays games. I should have stayed home. Rehearsal had left me in a bad mood, and then I let the thought of Dean with someone else turn me into a character from a rom-com. Dressing up like a harlot to get some undeserving guy's attention? Who am I? My self-disgust spurs me to keep walking. I approach the counter, where the throng of men there part for me like the Red Sea. I guess that's one benefit of looking like sex on stilettos. I order a Cosmo, because why not? I might as well live up to the image I've created. I brought a little black clutch with me, but when I open it to get some money, three different hands brandishing $20 bills fly up in the air.
I got this. It's on me. Let me buy you a drink.
Dean rambles out an annoyed sound. The next thing I know, he's yanking out his own 20 and shoving it at the bartender.
On me,
he says sharply. He glares at my other suitors, who all avert their gazes. Are you going to pee on me now to mark your territory? I hiss at him. His eyes flash.
I don't know. Should I? What the hell is going on here, Allie?
Nothing. I take the drink the bartender hands me and swiftly duck away from the counter. Dean stays hot on my heels, so I walk faster. And then we're with our friends again, and I breathe in relief. Good. Now he can't pester me for answers anymore. Penelope immediately rushes over, and my spine stiffens when she latches her talons onto Dean's bare forearm. The black t-shirt he's wearing stretches across his perfect chest and shows off his perfect arms. The same arms that were pinning me down the other night when he was moving inside me. I swallow a mouthful of my drink and try to pay attention to Hannah. She's talking about her showcase rehearsals and how happy she is that the faculty is letting her sing an original composition instead of pairing her up with a songwriting major. I'm thinking of sending out some demos to labels, she admits. Really? She mentioned a few months ago that she might want to focus more on songwriting than performing, but I hadn't realized it was a serious consideration on her part. Yeah. She toys with a strand of dark hair, which draws my attention to the neon green clip holding it back. It's the only splash of color in her all-black getup. I love composing. I mean, I also love being on stage, but Dexter and I were fooling around on the piano at rehearsal last night, and when he sang one of the songs I was working on, it was... I tune her out. I'm an awful friend, I know, but I can't help it. I'm far too distracted by the evil vulture that's pecking at Dean like he's a juicy carcass. Running her manicured fingers up and down his arm, stroking his biceps, leaning in to whisper something in his ear. In his defense, he doesn't appear to notice that Penelope is glued to his side. His gaze is fixed on me, and it's growing cloudier by the second. I sip my drink and spend the next hour making an effort to be social. But I'm just getting increasingly angry at myself. I inadvertently cast Dean in a role that he shouldn't be playing. He's not my boyfriend. I shouldn't be texting him after I have a bad day. I shouldn't be upset that he didn't text back or that he's talking to another girl. Though, again, in his defense, he doesn't seem the least bit interested in Penelope. Every time I sneak a peek at them, he's on his phone and not paying her a lick of attention. My clutch keeps buzzing, which tells me he's most likely texting me. But my phone stays in my purse because I'm too busy dealing with the realization that apparently I'm helpless without a boyfriend. I'm codependent? Is that the right word? And is that why I kept getting back together with Sean? Because I can't be alone? I had a boyfriend the entire time I was in high school, too. Okay, I might be making a mountain out of a molehill right now. Just because I've always had a boyfriend doesn't mean I've got issues, right? I like having a boyfriend. I like holding hands and kissing and snuggling and telling each other about our days. That doesn't mean I need one at all times. Maybe I just suck at flings. I'm sure plenty of other women have problems separating emotions from sex. Still, this is all very disheartening. I decide it's time to go. I'm not paying attention to a word anyone is saying, and now I kind of want to go home and Google codependency to see if I can self-diagnose myself. I do want to pee first, though, so I excuse myself and walk toward the restrooms. I don't bother turning around to see if Dean is following me, because I know he is. I caught a glimpse of him in my periphery, disentangling himself with Penelope the moment I moved away from the table. To my frustration, the line for the ladies' room is unacceptably long. Nope, I'm not waiting 30 minutes to use the toilet. I don't have to go that bad. But I know if I turn around, I'll probably bump into Dean. I keep walking straight ahead toward the emergency exit. I've used it before, so I don't expect an alarm to go off, and it doesn't. Cold air hits my bare arms and legs when I step into the alley behind Malone's. I hurriedly put on my coat just as the door flies open and Dean emerges. "Go away," I tell him. His nostrils flare.
"No."
"Fine, then stay out here. I'm going home." I fumble with the clasp of my clutch. I need to call a cab and tell Hannah I'm leaving. Dean snatches the purse from my hand, summoning an irritated expletive. "Can I please have my purse back?" I demand.
"No, not until you tell me why you're pissed at me."
I don't answer.
"Stop acting like a brat and fucking talk to me," he orders.
"Why don't you go find Penelope?" I suggest. "I'm sure she'd be happy to talk to you. If you're lucky, she might even stick her tongue down your throat again." He's momentarily startled. Then he starts to laugh.
"You're jealous of Penelope?"
"I'm not jealous," I answer coolly. "I just don't appreciate being lied to." Dean's jaw falls open.
"When did I lie to you?"
My cheeks heat up. Damn it. Damn him. And damn me for giving him the power to make me feel so... God, I don't even know what I'm feeling right now. "You promised to let me know if you were going to hook up with someone else," I accuse.
"I didn't hook up with her."
"Hannah said you were kissing her."
"No, she was kissing me. Or trying to, at least. I told her I wasn't interested."
"You did?" Some of my indignation falters, but I force myself not to soften. It doesn't matter what Dean did or didn't do. I still allowed this fling to veer in a direction I'm not comfortable with, and now it's time to get back on the right path.
"Yes, I did," he retorts. "Because contrary to what you believe, I'm a man of my word. I told you I wouldn't screw around with anyone else."
"Fine, I believe you." I swallow. "Can I go now?" I try to grab my purse, but he keeps it out of my reach.
"You're still pissed," he says flatly.
"I'm not."
"Don't bullshit a bullshitter, baby doll," he snaps.
"Are you saying your she kissed me story is bullshit?" I snap back.
"No, what I'm saying is..."
He spits out a frazzled curse, then exhales slowly.
"I'm saying you're not leaving until you tell me what's wrong. And FYI, if anyone should be pissed right now, it's me."
My jaw drops. "How so?"
"I've been getting shit for 2 days thanks to your Houdini act in the bathtub,"
Dean says darkly.
"I found a bottle of lube under my pillow last night with a note from Garrett saying, 'For your ass.' Logan bought a carton of pink lemonade and keeps giving me a thumbs up every time he drinks a glass. Grace can't look me in the eye without giggling.
And now I'm getting shit from you, and you won't even do me the courtesy of telling me why?
I'm done with this. The words burst out before I can stop them. We're not flinging anymore, okay? It's done. Dean's shoulders set in a severe line.
Why?
Because I said so.
And I don't get a say in it?
No.
Bullshit, he says again. You can't just call it off without giving me a good reason.
A powerless feeling rises in my throat because I don't have a good reason. I had a bad day and you were the first person I called. That sounds insane if I say it out loud. But I know myself. I can feel myself falling into the boyfriend bear trap, and I need to step out of it before the damn thing snaps shut and mangles my poor, helpless heart.
Are you telling me you're not attracted to me anymore? Is that it?
No, that's not it. You know I am. But
nothing.
He edges closer, and my breath gets trapped in my lungs. His eyes are on fire. His chiseled features twisted in a feral look. I've never seen Dean angry before. It's hot as hell.
How about we recap what happened tonight? How does that sound?
Before I can blink, I'm against the brick wall, and his mouth is inches from mine. We're half hidden between a stack of milk crates and a dumpster that is blessedly empty. Not that it matters, because even if it were overflowing with garbage, I still wouldn't be able to smell anything other than Dean's spicy, masculine scent. Every time I inhale, the addictive fragrance makes my brain foggier and foggier.
You heard I was at the bar with another chick, and you got jealous. How am I doing so far?
I clench my jaw.
Then you freaked out because you got jealous, right? Am I still nailing this?
When I don't answer, he locks my chin in his hand.
What's going on in that gorgeous head of yours? You think this means you're going to fall for me? That because you want me all to yourself, it means we're on the track to marriage and babies?
His mocking tone grates. Don't be an ass. He ignores me.
Well, it doesn't mean anything, baby doll. So you were jealous. Big deal. Do you know how fucking jealous I am right now? Do you think I like seeing every guy in the bar drooling over your tits and shoving their hands in their pockets to rearrange the stiffies you gave them showing up in that getup? I want to rip their eyes out just for looking at you.
My surprised gaze rises to his.
No lie,
he tells me.
But do you see me freaking out about it? No, because it doesn't mean a damn thing. Only that we're not done turning each other on.
He thrusts one big thigh between both of mine, grinding against me so I can feel his erection.
I still turn you on, don't I?
The hard ridge pressing into my belly distracts me from replying. I can feel my panties dampening. God, I'm ridiculously wet. And my nipples are suddenly incredibly sensitive, aching wildly as they pucker against the lace of my bra.
It's okay. You don't have to answer. I know I still do.
His lips brush over my ear, eliciting a flurry of shivers.
If I slide my hand under that dress right now, we both know what I'll find. That your pussy is wetter than it's ever been.
I can't breathe, because there's no air. Dean is stealing it all with his filthy taunts, and his hands are pushing my coat off my shoulders. I'm frozen in place. Too fascinated by the intensity simmering in his eyes. He lets the coat drop to the dirty pavement, then eases the hem of my dress up and cups his palm over my core. The resulting flash of pleasure is what snaps me out of my trance. We're in public, damn it. But Dean doesn't seem to care, and even though it's cold outside, his fingers are surprisingly warm as they dip under the crotch of my panties. Chuckling, he rubs the wetness pooled there.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
He's mocking me again, and my indignation returns in full force. Get over yourself, I mutter. I'd be wet if any guy was rubbing up against me.
Bull fucking shit.
His thumb brushes my clit, I almost fall over.
It's me. You want me.
He pushes one finger inside, and my inner muscles betray me by tightening around it.
And as long as this hungry pussy keeps dripping for me, we're not fucking done.
Oh God, he's fingering me in earnest now. The pleasure is unbearable, centered between my legs, pulsing in my veins. It's all I can concentrate on. Dean. Somehow I remember how to talk. Anyone can walk outside right now.
Good. Let them. Let them see what a bad girl you are.
I moan so loud it's embarrassing. Dean adds another finger and works both inside me, curling them until they hit a spot that brings white dots to my vision. I rock against his hand, no longer putting up a protest, but greedily taking what he's giving me.
Should we give them a real show? Should I take you right here against the wall?
My vision comes back into focus. His eyes are blazing with unadulterated lust. His free hand hovers over his zipper. He tips his head, waiting for me to respond. I don't know what spell he's cast over me. I should push his hand away, tell him to keep his pants zipped and stop being a jerk. We're in public. Someone really might see us. So why is my heart pounding even harder? And why am I dipping my head in a nod? Approval flashes in his eyes, along with a dose of pure need. His fingers slide out of my core, and then he spins me around so I'm facing the wall. I tense when muffled voices drift toward us from the street beyond the alley. What if we get caught? What if we get caught by a cop? People go to jail for this, right? Dean's hot breath fans over my neck as he lifts my dress up to my waist. The chill in the air raises goosebumps on the backs of my thighs. I should stop this. Probably. Maybe. But I don't. I hear the sound of plastic tearing, clothes rustling, and then his erection slides between my ass cheeks. It moves lower and lower until the tip nudges my opening.
You better come fast,
Dean whispers in my ear.
I'm so hot for you, I won't last more than a couple strokes.
I don't know if I'll last more than a couple seconds. My clit is swollen to the point of agony. So are my breasts. I've never had a quickie outside a bar before, and everything about this moment is different and thrilling and terrifying. The added element of danger, the risk of someone catching us, has turned my body into a live wire just waiting for one spark to ignite it. And that spark comes in the form of one deep thrust from Dean. My cry of climax is cut short when he claps a hand over my mouth. For someone who just taunted me about putting on a show, he's suddenly cautious of our surroundings. I, on the other hand, can't even remember what continent we're on. The orgasm races through me and leaves me breathless. I bear down on Dean's shaft with every uncontrollable shudder, and he gives a barely audible groan and buries his head between my neck and shoulder as he pumps into me from behind. He wasn't kidding. He comes so fast, I don't know whether to be impressed or tease him about it. He drives into me one last time and trembles wildly, his hands clamped tight on my hips. I'm trembling too, but I don't know if it's from the orgasmic aftershocks or the frigid breeze on my bare butt. When loud voices break the silence, I jump away from Dean and shove my dress down to my thighs. A peek behind the dumpster reveals shadowy figures ambling along the sidewalk. Not a single head turns toward the alley. I pick up my coat and hurriedly put it on as Dean tucks his still hard cock into his pants. He flicks the condom in the dumpster and gives me a wary look. What? My voice doesn't sound like my voice. It's lower, throatier. His gaze rakes over me from head to toe before locking with mine.
We're not done,
he says gruffly. I bite the inside of my cheek and say, I know. 19. Allie. According to Homeless Lou in Brooklyn, Whenever you get a déjà vu, it's simply a glitch that happens when aliens attempt to access your memories. I guess that's what the little green men are up to now, because holy hell, déjà vu city. Friday night starts out the same way it did 2 weeks ago. I leave the fitness center with my gym bag in one hand and my phone in the other. There are 3 unread messages from Sean waiting for me. I read them and groan. He really, really needs to talk to me. Crap. Somehow, I've successfully managed to avoid seeing him for 2 weeks. Sex with Dean has served as a great distraction, but tonight I don't have that luxury. Dean is still at the rink for the Hurricanes game, and he has plans with his friend Beau afterward. I need to decide what to do about Sean. Do I want to talk to him? Is there a point? I'm starting to think our previous breakups didn't stick because we tried to remain friends afterward. That's just a bad idea all around. You can't be friends with an ex, at least not right away. Megan insists that a 6-month no-contact period is required before you can even consider it. Not that Megan is a relationship expert. Last I talked to her, she was still seeing the 37-year-old doctor, but keeps making up excuses for why she can't meet his daughter. If she can't communicate with him about her fears and concerns, how is that a recipe for a healthy relationship? But I should be focusing on my own love life right now. Well, ex-love life, because I don't love Sean McCall anymore. It's scary how quickly it took for my feelings to fade. My mother used to say that time heals all wounds. That's definitely true. The year after she died, just picturing her face would trigger a rush of gut-wrenching pain. Now, when I think about her, it still hurts, but in a duller, bittersweet way. I miss her, but I don't feel the urge to curl up in a ball and cry the day away. But that's grief. I thought love would take longer to fade, which makes me wonder if maybe the process had begun long before Sean and I broke up. Maybe I fell out of love with him earlier and hadn't realized it. And maybe coffee isn't a terrible idea. I guess I can use it as an opportunity to gauge how my heart responds in his presence. I'm still debating as I walk up the stairs to the dorm. Bristol House only has 4 floors, so there's no elevator. Just 4 flights I have to climb while carting my gym bag. I exit the stairwell into the hall and freeze when I spot Sean sitting in front of my door. Once again, he's taken the decision out of my hands. His head is bent over his phone, but it snaps up at the sound of my footsteps. Then he's on his feet, walking toward me. My heart does respond, but not in the way I expected. Sean looks exactly the same. Dark hair sticking out the sides of a backward Red Sox cap, deep brown eyes.